This is Tully Blanchard, one of the original members of the Four Horsemen with Ric Flair and Arn and Ole Anderson. And you know what? With this world of high technology, you've got to go to the best. You've got to be the best. You've got to have the best equipment, just like the Four Horsemen always told you. InYourHeadOnline.com. That's the premier place to get your information about the wrestling business today, tomorrow, and even in the past. This is your place for the best, by the best, with the best.
Welcome to In Your Head, one of my favorites, Stan the Lariat Hansen. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Yeah, good, good.
That's good. And
excellent.
August 19th through the 21st, you can see Stan at the NWA Legends Fan Fest in Charlotte, North Carolina. And for more information, you can visit NWALegends.com. Is this your first year you're going to attend the Fan Fest?
Yeah, it is. You know, I'm excited about it. I've actually, you know, been retired a number of years and haven't been to very many things pertaining to professional wrestling, but surprising in my thought, I've kind of missed wrestling a little bit, and I'm looking forward to get back and seeing some of the wrestlers and also the fans.
Yeah. So
are the fans going to recognize you when you turn up for the festival?
Oh, I don't know. If they recognize me, that's fine. If they don't, you know, that's the way it is.
I think you meant that you changed your appearance since last time we saw you in the ring.
Oh, I don't know. I've lost quite a bit of weight, but I feel good, and you know, except my mustache is pretty dang gray.
You gonna show up chewing tobacco?
Well, I gave that habit up a little while ago too. But,
oh, that's good.
A lot of people remember that, but I used to chew for years, but I gave all that up.
All right. So you have no problem signing autographs and taking pictures with the fans?
No, you know, like I said, I'm glad somebody invited me, thought about me, you know, as, you know, somebody out of the past, I guess. But, you know, I feel like that I have a place, a little place in history of professional wrestling. And, you know, the people that that remember me there in the WCW and also Georgia Championship Wrestling and that area around there.
AWA champion.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, don't even think about that, but that's true. The AWA and you know, Rick Martel was a great opponent, and you know, there were some great wrestlers in that area also.
Mm-hmm. How did you get along with Vern Gagne during your AWA run?
Well, you know, I always had a problem, I guess, with back in the old days with some, you know, the promoters and everything. But I must say that you know, Vern, the man of his word, he kept his word with me. And so, you know, I mean, a lot of that was probably brought on my part as I look back on it. But as far as Vern is concerned, you know, he gave me his word on something and he kept his word. So what else can I ask?
Right. Now, I believe when you left there, you did not lose the title. You left when he was still a champion.
Yeah, I guess it was. And then I was later stripped of it, and rightfully so, I guess, because... but, you know, that was things that was done, and I was
right
in my business and so forth, and I made that decision. And, of course, Vern had to... he was the owner of the AWA, and that belt, and so he naturally, of course, got the belt back. But... I guess that was just part of my persona at that point in time. And, you know, I guess I was really one of the last outlaws around that kind of did things the way I wanted to do it. But that, looking back, is not necessarily always the right way.
Right. Another outlaw would be one of your tag team partners, Bruiser Brody. What was it like tagging with Brody?
Well, you know, at one point in time, we were probably the most domineering and biggest, most feared and toughest tag team in the world, and especially over in Japan with its completely different style. And we tried to come to the United States a few times together, and we just couldn't people just couldn't keep up with our style and our finesse and everything. And so Japan was such a much more physical arena to wrestle in. And we basically dominated that for about, you know, 10 years. And when we tried to bring that to the United States, we just, we had a hard time being accepted, you know, here in the States.
Mm-hmm. Were you ever contacted about coming to the WWF?
Well, I worked for the WWF. I worked for the WWF, and I also worked for the NWA and everything. So, yeah, we had a few negotiations, but I made the choice to put Japan first and foremost in my career. So I had a hard time being able to fit myself into being able to work both sides of the ocean, I guess, and I chose Japan. So it was difficult for promoters to put time and money into me when I was constantly being over in Japan.
Right. Yeah, you worked for the WWF, for Vince Senior, I believe.
Right. I worked for Vince Senior twice, and Vince Junior was involved in his business the second time, quite a bit.
Yeah. And you had the big match with Bruno, where I believe you broke his neck.
Right. In fact, I just happened to be at my friend's house, and he has the magazine of some of my matches, and it shows the exact point where I slammed Bruno into his head, and it broke his neck. And I was just looking at that 15 minutes ago. And thank goodness, you know, that there wasn't any kind of spinal damage or anything. It's an awesome picture. You just don't see that very often, but he put it together in my retirement match. They found that the picture, and it's lucky that Bruno didn't actually, you know, have some kind of permanent spinal problems, because he came straight down at the top of his head. And anyway, I'm glad that, of course, that it did, you know, permanently damage him.
Right. So you prefer the Japanese style over the American style? Like the stiffer style?
Yeah, I do. I must say that I do. I think that, you know, it's much more physical. Things weren't organized as well over there. You know, inside the ring, you were just left to go. And I was able to kind of take my matches the direction I wanted to go. And so anyway, that was one of the reasons. Plus, but the main reason was is that I went over there on a contract. I knew what I was going to get. I didn't have to fight for my money like you had to in those days in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Did you prefer the crowds in Japan to American?
Crowds?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You know, the American crowds are, at that point in time, were much more vocal. It was much easier to wrestle in the United States to get the people involved. They were always very verbal and everything. So you had an idea of what was going on. You could kind of read the crowd a little bit better. In Japan, you could have a 20-minute match, and you might not hear a word. I mean, a word. But that didn't mean that they weren't into the wrestling match. They just didn't show their emotion much in the beginning. It's changed now later, you know, but in the beginning, it was a huge difference.
What about the food there? Did you get used to the food quickly?
No, it wasn't quickly, but I ended up spending, you know, the first 2 or 3 years there, I was constantly looking for a McDonald's or a Kentucky Fried Chicken. Brody actually was the guy that took me out and showed me the Japanese, culture and life. You know, after the matches, and I got into all their food, and actually I just preferred that so much, and of course adjusted to it, because I ended up just getting out and being basically where the Japanese were, and it was great food, and what a great time I had over there, and people are extremely friendly and pro-American, and I guess, you know, I did get recognized a bit. You know, as the people treat you really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Have you got any good stories?
I got tons of stories. Some of them I can't even say.
I was just saying that you could tell without getting in trouble.
Well, yeah, but those were a long time ago. But, yeah, I got a lot of great memories and had a lot of great times. And a lot of times I was with a number of Americans that came over on tour. And I think most I think I helped get them used to and show them the Japanese culture. Mm-hmm. Like Brody showed, you know, me and actually King Curtis and Mark Lewin showed Brody that part of Japan. So once you learn to do that, and if you were over there enough to do that, then you really ended up enjoying Japanese culture.
Which company did you work for?
Well, I actually started I went the first time through the Funks, who broke me into the wrestling. They were booking for All Japan and Giant Baba. I went one time for them, and then later went to the WWF, where Vince Sr. had a relationship with Inoki for New Japan, and he booked me into New Japan. And then after going there a couple of times, they asked whether I'd like to just, they asked me, are you working for Vince or are you independent? And I always thought of myself as being independent. So, I ended up working for Inoki a while, but later on, as my business mainly went to Japan, and with New Japan, they gave me the opportunity to get over, just things happened where I had an opportunity to go back and be with Baba and All Japan and spent most of my career with him in the end.
Mm-hmm. How would you compare Inoki and Giant Baba?
Well, both of them are absolute legends over there. Inoki was a little much more different type of wrestler than Giant Baba, even though he was very quick and he could move real well. Baba was a much bigger guy, but he was actually tendon strength, kind of like a Danny Hodge type of strength.
Right.
He was extremely strong, too, you know. But Baba is the man I developed a great respect for, because after years and years of working for him, I was mainly on a handshake deal. And everything that our relationship was based upon trust after a while. And so I guess, you know, I ended up growing, if you can say close in a business sense, to Giant Baba. But Inoki, I have a lot of respect, and he's still alive, and he's a legend there in Japan also.
You have any plans? Do you ever go back to Japan still, just for vacation?
Yeah,
really?
I go back. Actually, of course, John Bob passed away, and my ran the business for about a year, but then sold the business to Muta.
Right.
And now I've taken over All Japan, and I go back once a year to try to, help with a little bit of promotion, and I'm kind of like the president of something, You know what that means. It means somebody has zero power.
Yeah, it's like the figurehead.
I can't hurt nobody. I can't help nobody. So I go over and I enjoy going back to Japan and at the base of some of my friends and the fans there.
Ever think about coming back for a match?
No, not really. When I went long and hard all the way to the very end, and when I decided to hang it up, I knew that I wouldn't ever wrestle again, and I had both my knees replaced and my back operated on and took care of some of those problems. And, I just decided at that point in time that, that I'd be one of the few guys that never unretire.
Yeah. I remember one of the big matches you had in Japan was versus Vader, where you
right.
Where his eye got knocked out during the match. I saw it on tape.
Well, it wasn't knocked out, but...
it was like hanging out of his... Yeah.
Yeah, it looked like his eye was hanging out, but
right.
It was pulled up real good. Yeah, that was a brutal match. Vader is the real deal. He was, he's a huge guy, much bigger than me at that time even, 100 pounds more, and he's a legitimate athlete and very tough, and he's got his own agenda that he'd like to promote, and that's where the real battle comes in. But it was a battle, and a lot of people talk about that. To this day, is one of the most physical battles, and it was. And just because Vader's eye was, you know, busted up, doesn't mean that I wasn't beat up and bruised. He beat me up pretty good, too.
Right. Did you know it was as bad an injury when you were in the ring?
Do what?
Did you know his eye was in that bad a shape while you were in the ring? Or did you not know until afterwards?
As blind as I am, you know, I mean, I wear pretty thick glasses. I can see about the end of my hand. And I was close enough. I did see something, but you know, until I saw him later, I didn't really, you know, I knew that his eye. But you know, I was seeing so many stars from him hitting me that you know I wasn't really concerned about his eye.
Was that an interpromotional match? It was like New Japan versus All Japan.
You know, I don't know if it was per se New Japan against All Japan, but they ended up, I guess that was one of the matches, kind of a dream match that the fans, because Vader was for New Japan, and he was the main gaijin or foreigner for those guys, and I was, you know, at that point in time, I was like the top American over there for us, and the Japanese fans wanted to see us fight, so I guess that's how it came about.
Right. So you never felt any racism towards the Americans while you were there?
From
the Japanese, the Japanese. Yeah, well, from the wrestlers or from the fans?
No, not really. No, you might run into some place where they might not want gaijins or foreigners in some kind of a late night place because. You know, they didn't want to pay. We didn't want to pay, you know, what considered Japanese way of doing business. You know, they pay a cover charge. We always, you know, they think that was the reason, not so much that we were American or, you know, foreign. I didn't run into that at all.
That's good.
Yeah.
Anyone ever complain about you being stiff with them? Or was that just
thousands of guys. No, I guess I was. That's why I'm so beat up now. I guess, you know, I asked no quarter, gave no quarter, and it was very physical over there. And
right.
The Japanese, they never ever, they didn't complain. They dished it out, and they had to take it. And as far as the American, I think that was the difference in style, you know. I guess I was stiff.
I guess you should have complained a little bit more. You wouldn't have had such bad knees, maybe.
I don't know.
Did they complain more in the U.S. or Japan, do you think, about the stiff style?
No, they don't complain. They don't complain in Japan. That's just part of...
That's just the way it is, right.
That's Japanese style. So, you know... You know, you bust somebody open or you get busted open and you don't cry and they don't cry and that's just part of the business. Over here in the States, it was a little bit different, you know. But again, looking back, I think that, people get, get hurt and when you get hurt, you just have to crawl off to Texas or wherever you might be, and then you're on your own to get better, you know. So, you know, nobody's there to take care of you. So, you know, there's a point there where being stiff can be dangerous. And, I hope that I wasn't that way. I've never, ever intentionally tried to hurt anybody. There's certain people in the business that, you know, that you might have a reputation that you got to watch out for. They might try to intentionally hurt you. And those you had to watch out for, but I hope and I don't think that I was that type.
Yeah. When Hogan was at his peak in the WWF, like during the 80s, did they ever contact you about coming in and having a run with Hogan?
It came very close one time, and I had a lot of great respect for Hogan. He's one of the type of guys that had to live in a van, sleep on the beach, starve to death, had to go through all the hard times to even get an opportunity. And then, when he got there and when he got that opportunity, he took, and I was teamed up with him with New Japan and Japan, and we were a good team together, and I got to know him pretty good there. And then, of course, he went on and stayed, came back to the States, and, you know, the rest is history. I mean, he was the first one that really took, you know, had an opportunity to take his position to a higher level. And, you know, I was happy for him. And you know, there's two sides of the camp, either Hogan's a prima donna or, you know, Hogan, you know, was somebody that, you know, that took an opportunity and really did well. And I'm in that camp. I think that, you know, he got an opportunity and at the right place, right time. And, you know, he just promoted himself real well and got in a great position. So the original question was about Hogan was,
if you're ever going to come and have a run with them.
So we ended up doing that, but again, Japan kind of got in the way of it, and also I, at that point in time, I just a week before had made a deal through Ole Anderson and the NWA going there on a part-time basis, and there was nothing signed, but I'd given my word, so, you know, it was like, you know, I just didn't want to back out on my word.
Right.
And, of course, I would have ended up making much more money with Hogan, you know, I think. So, you know, that was something that I kind of take a little pride in. I must say that once I give you my word, you know, I'll try to stand by it. So.
Yeah, that's the way it should be.
How did you get along with Hogan?
You know, if I get hungry here in Homemade, maybe I should have done it the other way. Anyway.
What were you saying, Barbie?
I was just wondering how you got along with Ole Anderson.
Oh, Ole Anderson? I got along great with Ole Anderson. You know, again, there's another guy that there's two sides of the coin. You know, as a booker, you know, he had to do things his way, a hard way. A lot of times, you know, everybody wants to be told they're a star. Well, Ole didn't, you know, tell everybody they're a star. He just expected everybody to go out and be professional and do things. And, you know, I've seen Ole, you know, make mistakes, and, but, gee, so have I. But Ole and I got along. If he, you know, he was a hard river. A river meaning he used to joke with people a lot.
Right.
And I think a lot of times people took him serious. And me, he started me on that, and I came back on him in the same way and just called him short and did all this other stuff, and I think that's how our relationship got. Anyway, a lot of people were intimidated by his joking, I think, and took him wrong a little bit.
But yeah.
As far as our business-wise and everything, he was always just like Vern. He gave me his word, and what he said, he always did. And you know, I had, you know, I was close with Ole.
Were you a big ripper on the road or in the locker room?
No, I'm not, but I used to enjoy watching.
Yeah.
I'm verbally, but I never ever, there's some guys that go to huge, I mean, elaborate things to rip people, and I never did get into that, you know. It always kept people loose, and, you know, it was interesting.
Yeah. Do you have any memorable rib stories that you remember someone else pulling on someone?
Well, one of my favorite ones is when there was a wrestler down in Texas and a promoter of Abilene, Texas, the Lawman, Don Slatton, and he pulled a great rib on a lot of people. And one was Jerry Kozak, who's Nick and Jerry Kozak. And a big hunting rib where he tied up a dead deer and had Jerry go around looking at this deer, and finally Jerry shot it and everything. She blew it all the heck, but it wouldn't drop because it was sailing wired up and things like that. I just, you know, that was, you know, elaborate. I mean, what energy they put into the rib, you know, to get it going.
Right. It's just something to do to pass the time, I guess.
I guess. It was a serious effort to get somebody. I don't know.
Any plans of ever writing a book? There's a lot of wrestling books out there now.
Well, you know, I've actually wrote one in Japan a few years ago, you know, when it was, I'm actually, you know, kind of putting that into English a little bit. So, yeah, actually, I'm, you know, that's another damn wrestling book. But, you know, I think that people that might be interested in my book, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Just, it's basically a story, you know, about my career. And, I was in a couple pivotal points, you know, in the wrestling business. And, it might be interested in reading, I think. But, I've kind of started to maybe put something out like that. I never thought I would here in the States, but I guess I'm going to try.
Yeah.
Were you a wrestling fan growing up?
Was I a wrestling fan?
Yeah, before you got into it.
Yeah, no, I wasn't. Not until I was in college, you know, I got into wrestling a little bit because Terry Funk was seven years before me and played at the same school, and everybody knew him, and I got to know Terry, and so I got into wrestling. But I must say the very first thing that I learned is remember seeing on television as a kid growing up in the little old place out in Texas that you could barely see the TV screen was a wrestling match. And I can still remember that to this day. As I was five years old, and the first thing we saw on television was a wrestling match. And I never dreamed about being a professional wrestler, though.
What are some of your memories of Terry Funk?
Oh God! Now I've got a book full of memories of Terry Funk.
I mean, right.
He's probably one of the unique characters of all time. And of course, like I said, he's the guy that started me in the business. So I've got a lot of admiration for Terry Funk. Plus, he is without a doubt probably the toughest guy, you know, that's ever come through professional wrestling. I know, because I hit him with everything as hard as you can hit somebody without killing them. And in Japan, we had some classic matches of, at that time, he would be considered maybe the old guard, and I was the young guard, and he was fighting to keep his position and everything, and I was trying to establish mine. And even though he started me and everything, the competition of what we wanted in Japan, it was absolutely the most physical thing in the world, and I have nothing but great respect for him.
And he's still wrestling.
He can take it. Yeah, that's what I hear. He's still going.
Yeah.
Good for him. If anybody could.
Oh, yeah. I think him and Flair, they'll wrestle forever.
Yeah, there's another guy. I mean, he's stayed in good shape, you know. I mean, he's obviously stayed in good shape. And, I think you learn early on that, you learn in the first 3 or 4 years what, the things that you're going to end up in, seriously hurt yourself. And you just don't do those things. And then, if you usually get seriously hurt in the first 4 or 5 years, and then after that you don't do the things that are really going to hurt you. I think Ric Flair's that way. You know, he probably, is doing the same things he was doing and knows he won't get hurt. But, again, just phenomenal. A guy that's in shape. And, wow, how does he do it? I don't know.
Well, Funk, though, he started doing the moonsault, I think, after he was 50.
Yeah. Well, the Funk, Funk's been doing a bunch of stuff, but he just didn't do it in the ring. he's been doing moonsaults off of cars and off of crowds and everything else a long time before he ever did it in the ring.
I think you wrestled for a little while in ECW, didn't you? In its early stages?
Yeah, I did. I did work for those guys when they first started or something, I guess. A number of shows, yeah.
Was Paul Heyman with them at the time? Or was it Eddie Gilbert?
You know what? I think he came in the very last show that I I worked for those guys.
Did you ever watch the product, ECW?
I did prior, when I was involved with them a little bit.
Right.
But, I, to tell the truth, I didn't, I was going to Japan so much, and I just concentrated on my business. When I was back here in the States, I didn't watch any wrestling. Didn't matter who they were, much on television, because I was just, when I came home, I was just with my family and
Did you learn to speak Japanese all the time you spent there?
I can get around, you know, but I didn't learn it fluently, and that's one of my big regrets. But you know, it's a tough language, especially when everybody around you is either speaking English or their interpreters are interpreting for you and so forth. But I could get around with it, you know.
Do you mind answering some questions from our message board? Some of the ones that the fans sent in?
Well, I'll tell you if I don't.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. We'll try to weed out the bad ones. You got some there, Barbie?
Absolutely. Bob from Florida wants to know what it was like working with Lex Luger in WCW.
Yeah. Well, there's another guy, a lot of guys, you know, I must say. I think some people got something bad to say about him, you know, but, you know, I had no problems whatsoever with Lex Luger. I thought he was, he was a very impressive individual and everything, and when we worked together, we only worked 4 or 5 times, but, you know, the people liked him, and, you know, I think that he showed me respect, and, you know, I had no problems with him.
Duckman wants to know who your favorite opponent was in Japan.
Oh, man. Man, I've had a bunch. I mean, most of them were, you know, probably started, you know, with, you know, Terry Funk deal that I've already kind of touched on. But Andre the Giant was one of my opponents. And probably, I mean, not probably, he is the reason that I probably was established as one of the top wrestlers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Guys there in Japan was because of Andre the Giant and our battles over there that to this day I think people in Japan are still talking about one of our matches we had at an outdoor tennis arena that was just a great match, and I tell you, I had a lot of respect and I am very thankful for Andre the Giant.
Duckman also wants to know what it felt like to be the only Gaijin to have defeated Inoki and Baba.
Well, I don't know. If you ask me that question, you know, I don't even think about that. But, you know, when you're, you know, also, you know, it makes me feel, you know, that I do have a place in at least Japanese history, you know, wrestling. Those are two great guys. Two absolute legends in their own time, you know, and also all their young boys that are now the new generation, from Misawa, Tabashi, to Choshu Ricky, and all those from New Japan side. Also, you know, I had opportunity to wrestle and help. They had to fight me to get over and to get into a top spot, and I think that made them fighting me really help their become established, you know, and so, you know, I feel all those guys were, you know, just great athletes, never complained, took a real butt kicking, and, you know, also dished it out.
Rickard Mustache wants to know if you ever clipped yourself when you came to the ring swinging the rope and cowbell.
Did I ever what?
Did you ever hit yourself with the bell?
Oh, let's see. No, I don't think I ever hit myself. I hit a few other people, you know. But I've come close a couple of times. But
right.
I never really got hit with the bell. I whipped myself. The rope whipped around and hit me a few times, you know, but never the bell.
We just want to say, before we let you go here, to visit NWALegends.com to see Stan Hansen in person at the NWA Legends Fan Fest August 19th, the 20th, and the 21st in Charlotte, North Carolina.
More information at NWALegends.com.
Right. And before we let you go, is there anything you want to tell your fans? Why they should come see you?
Yeah, well, you know, I actually, like I said, I haven't done very many of these things. Actually, there's probably three or four, probably on one hand, I can probably count the number of times I've done this. But I'm looking forward to coming and seeing some of the older my opponents and a few acquaintances in pro wrestling, but also, you know, to touch base with some old fans. They got to all be getting old, too, because it's been a long time since I've been in and around the wrestling business. But looking forward to coming to Charlotte and being able to see the fans, and I hope that they'll come out. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing everybody.
Maybe buy you a drink.
Well, just one.
We had Ox Baker on a couple of weeks ago. Is there anything you want to tell him?
Who?
Ox Baker.
Oh, Ox Baker?
Yeah.
You know, I got a good story on Ox too. You know, you got I was in Japan with Ox, and he actually gave me a good idea about what direction to send my my career.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, looking back, I Ox Baker was he's got the unique look.
Oh yeah.
Or whatever look that is.
It's unique. It's definitely unique.
But anyway, so Ox Baker, he's the one that suggested that I go back and nickname myself Batman at Batman Stan Hansen at one time. And so I kind of used that name for a while, you know, and Ox Baker gave me that idea.
He was a real nice guy. We had him on here a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, you know, actually, Ox Baker was a real nice guy, and, you know, I heard him get up in a karaoke bar a long time ago before, and he stopped the house because he's got a great voice.
Really?
I don't know how to do it now, but he stopped the house.
Did you ever do the karaoke in Japan?
Oh yeah, but nobody ever asked me to sing twice.
All right. Well, thank you for coming on. It's been a great interview.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, my pleasure, and I hope to see everybody in Charlotte.
All right. We'll talk to you again sometime. Good luck in the future.
Okay.